Okay, good evening all. This is K2KEY. My name is Mel, Mike Echo Lima, along with 2RIW. Dick, we have here the TechNet on Sunday night. And the TechNet is open to all. Its basic is to help people with their technical problems or technical discussions with amateur radio and other related fields. So, to sign into the TechNet, just give me a call and your name and a yes or a no if you have a question or a comment. This is K2KEY listening.
And 2EO, no questions, Mel. Good evening.
And 2 Mike Bravo, no questions asked. Good evening, Mel.
WA2, Victor David Henry, John, yes.
WS2N, Paul, with a yes. Good evening, Mel.
2 JXM.
K2 JXR, I believe, also.
Kilo Charlie 2, Tango Delta Lima. Name is John. And yes, question.
KB1NNH, Jerry, no question.
Okay, we'll group together. Say hello first of all to N2EO, and very happy New Year to you and your family, Rich, and N2MB, Barry, of course, to you also, and then we had John, WA2BBH, who have a question, Paul, WS2N, I'm sure will have a comment on our current conditions in space. And KC2TDL, I believe it is. Another John, you also have a question. And KB1NN, is that D? I can David, Jerry, over.
No, it's KB1NNH.
KB1NN, is that H like in Harvey or Henry, over.
Kilo Bravo 1, November Hotel.
Okay, KB1NNH. Jerry, do you have a question, Jerry? Over.
No, thanks.
Okay, that's Jerry with a no. Okay, got enough here to get started. First one up on the list is WA2BDH. John, go ahead.
Okay, fine business. Say good evening to all. My question has to do with dummy loads. I'm in the process of restoring an old Heathkit antenna, PBC oil and all. My question is, I know I won't be able to find the original resistor, but I'm looking at some of these RF termination resistors made by Bourne, B-O-U-R-N-E. They seem to make some fairly high power RF termination resistors. I was just wondering if anybody has ever had any experience with these resistors. And also, I saw something on the internet about salt water dummy loads. Wonder if anybody has ever experimented with that. Back to that.
Okay, very good, John. Rich recognized. Yes, I know the antenna, very well. In fact, I happen to own one. And the original resistors in there, if they are cooked out, you can replace them. They are replacements. There's a number of ways to replace it. As far as the original oil that was in there, I would say, if you're opening the can, I didn't open the can, it seals mine, but if the can is open, then you dump that oil as well. You got to get rid of it properly. What I did is, with another can tenner, when I opened it because of the PVC problems with that oil, I took it over to Con Edison plant where they disposed of the oil for me. Now, there's a number of ways that you can replace those resistors. You can buy some replacements that are similar to that, or you can buy some off-the-shelf resistors made by Allen Bradley that will work quite well. But first we'll pick up Rich and see what he has to suggest, and I can then tell you how I went ahead to restore a similar Cantenna, John. So hold on one. N2EO, go ahead, please.
Okay, Mel, I have two possible sources, Sam. The resistor doesn't have to be the exact diameter. I know the dummy load, and it uses like set screws, brass screws with nuts, three on each side spaced at 120 degrees to tighten against the metallized part of that non-inductive resistor. A very good source of these type of oddball parts, and you can Google it on the internet, Nebraska Surplus Sales. Nebraska Surplus Sales. They've got all types of odd components. I bought a lot of stuff from them. High quality, a little on the pricey side, but I never got junk from them in maybe 15 years I've been dealing with them. Another possible source, I own a MFJ high-power dummy load, and I noted in there the resistors in there, which are 50 ohm, they use four of them, two in series with two more in series and a pair paralleled up to make it, I think it's a 2.5 kilowatt load, but the resistors look very, very similar to what's in the EastKit Cantenna. I'm not sure if it's the same. It may actually be the same or very similar. And as far as the oil, I used the Cantenna for many years, and the mineral oil works fine. They recommended EastKit. They recommended mineral oil as a second choice. It works just fine, and it's, it won't harm you. Back to you, Mel. Back to that N2EO.
KV2JXM.
Okay, we'll pick up JXR in one moment. You can use mineral oil, Rich. Another very good source, in fact, what is a better cooling agent is transmission fluid, ATF. Transmission fluid, because it is specifically made to dissipate heat, will work quite well, and it's very reasonably priced, of course. You can use any of the ATF oils. That's what I sold the resold the Cantenna with it. As far as resistors are concerned, yes, you can get them, as Rich said, possibly from MFJ. Another way you can do it, what I have done to make my own, actually, system, you can take like 2-watt resistors and parallel them up. Like, for instance, if you took 1,000 ohm resistors, 2-watt resistors, and if you want to know how many, well, if you want a 50 ohm dummy load, you divide 1,000 by 50, that means you need 20 resistors in parallel, and you can put them on a, like I did, on two pieces of, in other words, suspended them in parallel between two pieces of copper stripping, and then immerse them in the oil, and another way you could put together a very simple dummy load. Let me see, is that WA2JXR, is that you, Stu, or did you want to make a comment? Over.
JXM, Juliet, X-Ray Michael. Yeah, I was wondering where Dick is tonight, and I was going to tell him about the outcome of my antenna repair. Also, you might want to get up on the mic a little bit. Your audio is pretty low there.
Okay, they usually tell me my audio is too loud. Okay. All right, JXM. What is your name, please?
This is Gary. Gary.
Okay, Gary, we'll get to you in a little while. Let me finish up with John and his project here on his dummy load. So, John, that's the number of ways to go. I guess Rich had a very good idea that you can check with MFJ, and you can buy the resistors from them because I guess that. Rich, is that a 1 gallon can that MFJ? I'm not familiar with MFJ's dummy load. Is that approximately a 1 gallon, like you would say, a 1 gallon paint can similar to the can antenna? Rich, over.
They have a number of models now. This is a 2.5 kilowatt load. It uses 4 resistors. It's in a square box and it's fan cooled. But the 450 ohm resistors that they put 2 in series in parallel with another 2, it looks about the same size. I remembered when I looked at it, what struck me is it looks like the same single resistor they use in the Cantenna. But like I said, he could also check with surplus sales in Nebraska. They're very good on stuff like that.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I have a big load unit that is made with the carborundum resistors. They're pretty big. I mean, it's about 18 inches long and about an inch and a half in diameter. They were commercial resistors. I mean, that's the dry dummy load with a fan on them. It was a commercial load system. As far as MFJ, Rich, does MFJ have a similar thing to the can antenna that Heath Kit used to sell? Do they have one, a wet dummy load, over?
I believe they do, Mel, yes.
Okay, all right. So in other words, if they do have a wet dummy load, it's very possible that they basically have the same resistance in that unit, and you could most likely easily replace them by that method of just purchasing from MFJ. And then, like I say, John, a very easy source of coolant is automatic transmission fluid, ATF, John. Go ahead.
Okay, fine business. Very good. You've given me some great ideas. The ATF sounds great, since that is designed to be a heat dissipating oil. I definitely do want to be very careful getting rid of this oil with the PCBs and the polychlorinated biphenyls or whatever the heck they are. So I do want to be very careful getting rid of that. And I'll be doing a search on at Nebraska sales, Nebraska Surplus. There, I definitely have a love of surplus shops going back to the old Corbin Street days. Very good. Really appreciate it. The other thing I saw on the net was the salt water thing. And I'll tell you the truth. I remember as a kid, let me just let it drop. I remember as a kid playing around with that with my old Viking Challenger back in my general days, building a little saltwater dummy load and actually loading up into it. But that Challenger, the old E.F. Johnson Challenger, had a pie net in it, of course, so it could match anything. I don't think it was 50 ohms. But I did see something on the net where somebody showed a saltwater dummy load and using one of these MFJ impedance measuring devices, show it to be 50 ohms at 30 megahertz. So I don't know. I sort of take it with a grain of salt. But I do appreciate all the great ideas everyone has given. Back to Ned.
I've seen that with salt water. I don't know if I particularly care for that type of dummy load, because eventually, you know, if it heats up, you're going to start to form a corrosion around the probes that go into the water. And you can't have salt water tank sitting in the shack, I don't think, as your dummy load would be very convenient, John. So the Cantenna, what you're talking about, is a great dummy load. As I said, I've had them for a number of years, both homebrew. I've got one that's rated at about 3 kilowatts, the bigger one that's in a 2.5 gallon can, but based on the same idea of the resistors immersed in oil. And yes, John, that oil, that PVC oil, polyvinyl chloride, or what I believe it is, PVC, is so-called a hazardous material. So what to do with it, John, is I think, now I'm not sure, are you out in the islands with, I know here in Brooklyn where I was, or where I am, Con Ed took it off my hands. I took it over to the plant, Con Ed power plant, and they were very kind, so I told them what the situation was, and they had it in a can, and they accepted it. I believe if you're out on the island, most likely I think that Loco would do the same thing, John. Do you have anybody locally like that that you know of that you can dispose of this oil? I would not suggest keeping it around, John. Over.
Comment.
I have seen from the sanitary district, from the garbage people, this notice that comes around disposing of hazardous materials, including paint, benzene, things like that. So I might be able to dispose of it there. I'm sure that, that would just be considered a regular, you know, as a hazardous substance. Go ahead.
Somebody in there that they're all noise. I don't know if they're trying to sign in or make a comment, but there's nothing but noise. Yeah, John, very good. Like I say, if you can dispose of the oil sooner, the better. And then check with, as Rich said, Nebraska, Surplus of Nebraska, and also, I guess, MFJ. I'm sure one of those two sources. Or if you have a big box of old 2-watt resistors laying around, as I say, you can parallel them up. If they're all the same value, same wattage, you can parallel them up. And if you want to know how many, you just divide whatever resistance they are. If it's like 1,000 ohms, as I said, you divide it by 50, and that'll tell you you need 20 of those resistors in parallel. So, okay, very good, John. I'm sure you'll be able to straighten out the project, come back in the future and let us know how you made out with this project. Anybody want to make any further comments before we go ahead with the next subject?
Yeah, one more comment, Bill. M2EF.
K2UPN.
Okay, K2UPN, and first we heard Rich. So first, Rich, go ahead, please.
Okay, Mel, if he uses 2-watt resistors, that's fine. 50,000 ohm 2-watt resistors work well. Just make sure don't use wire wound resistors. You want to use carbon resistors or carbon film resistors, because wire wound resistors will have inductance in radio frequencies. That's something you definitely don't want. And those are available if you need 50 2-watt carbons or 50 2-watt carbon film. You can get them in places like Newark Electronics, Fairwater, or Allied Electronics, not to be confused with the old Allied Radio. Or another source is Newark Allied or Mauser Electronics. But you want to specify not to be wire wound, carbon composition or carbon film only. Back to net. And Mel, I'll correct that other call. K2UPS who came in there. That's Rich. Pick him up.
Quickie.
Okay, go ahead, Quickie.
Yeah, thanks. KB2JXM. I just wanted to find out if Rich is going to... it's going to be on next week.
K2LIW will be on tonight in a couple of minutes. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, take your time, Dick. Yeah, Dick will be with you. He was a little late getting home. He was in the city, so he said that he was mobiling, and he'll be with us in a couple of minutes. Yeah, very good point, Rich. Yeah, I should have specified that. That has to be carbon resistance and not wire wound resistance. All right, let me pick up K2UPS, Rich, another Rich. So go ahead with your comments. K2UPS, this is K2KEY.
Thank you, Mel. Kate to UPS. Returning. I just have some information about getting rid of that hazardous material. There's a collection in Town of Oyster Bay. They usually have one every single month. And even if you're not in Town of Oyster Bay, I've brought a lot of stuff to them, and they've never checked for ID. But the next one's going to be on Saturday, the 17th of October, at the Town Hall South on Hicksville Road in Massapequa. And the next one after that is going to be on Sunday, November 15th, at the Town of Oyster Bay Public Works Garage on Miller Place in Syosset. I can give you a phone number. But that's a good place to get rid of any sort of hazardous waste that you might have.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Rich. Yeah, I noticed several, I'm sure, several different sources of collecting of hazardous material. So I'm sure that John will be able to find one of them. Years ago, the only one that would take that type of oil was Con Ed. I guess they weren't as hip to hazardous material years ago and pay as much attention to it. But it was circulated around through amateur radio magazines and other sources that be careful of these PVC oils that were used in a number of things, such as, well, the dummy loads, but also in a number of the oil-filled capacitors. Some of my big old oil-filled capacitors had that in there. Even the transformers were all filled with that PVC oil. So I had several different times that I ran into that situation, and as I said, I was able to dispose of it that time with Con Ed. Okay, anybody else want to make a comment about any of this or above before we go on? This is K2KEY with the TechNet.
KO2OK, comment.
I DeWalt Hokenep 10 enabled.
Okay, K2OK, go ahead please, give us your name and your comment.
Good evening, Mel. This is KO2OK. My name is Bennett. I'm in northern New Jersey. Listen almost every week. Just a quick correction. You've said it a few times. PVC is not hazardous, and that's not the oil that's in the cantennas. It's PCB. It's polychlorinated biphenyls. That's the oil in the cantennas and other transformers. PVC is plastic that's used everywhere, right? Back to net. KO2OK.
You're right. Polychlorovinyl. Yeah, polychlorovinyl. Yeah, that's a PCB. You're right. I'm sorry. I don't know where I got a little confused here. Yeah, PVC. Yeah, PCB oil. Yes, you're right. That's what was used in all that stuff. I believe it is no longer used anywhere. Am I correct, Bennett? Over.
Well, I don't know anywhere, but it's been banned in a number of products. I don't know if it's banned everywhere, but in a number of products anyway. It was just that clarification, Mel. I'm just listening. Thanks. KO2OK.
Hey, Mel. KO2OK.
Yes, Ed, Eric.
All right. We're going to take a breath for about 2 minutes to let this thing cycle up. I just repaired something, and as soon as it comes back on, you keep going. It's going to take about 2 minutes.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Okay, you're all set.
Welcome to the New England Reflector, 912.
Channel 6.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Let's see. Let me first check see if Dick is with us now. K2RIW, this is K2KEY.
Yes, I am, Mel. I'm here, and of the people who said yes, because I wasn't able to write down their names and the call letters, if you could repeat them, I'd appreciate that. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, I'll read down who has joined us as of now. We had Rich N2EO, Barry N2MB, then we just finished answering John WA2VEH, his question on dummy loads. The next one signed in is Paul, WS2N. Then we had Gary sign in, WA2JXM. He's got a comment or a question on his antenna problem. I think that we heard from him a couple of weeks ago. Next sign-in is KC2TDL, John. I believe he's also got a question. We also had KB1NNH, like in hotel, Nancy Nancy Hotel. Jerry had no questions. Then we had another Rich, K2UPS, who just made a comment about also on the same subject of the dummy load. And finally, Bennett, KO2OK, KO2OK Bennett, correct me and tell me that TCD, I don't know how I reversed it, but TCD oil that was used in a number of those products. So, that's what it is right now. So, next on the list would be Paul, WS2N. Go ahead with him and then continue, Dick. K2RIW, this is K2KEY with the tech desk.
Very fine, Mel, and thank you for taking over. I'm coming down late from New York, from Upper New York State, where I was attending a conference. Paul, I guess you're next, and after that, Gary, if I understand correctly, and Gary, John, Jerry, no. Looks like Paul. Paul, you're next, and go right ahead with your question. K2RIW with K2KDY.
Okay, very good, Dick. Well, I had a question, not really ham radio related, but dealing with cleaning of these VCR heads. Wonder if you've heard of a cleaning stick. It's called a chamois covered cleaning stick. If you've heard of it, if you use it, or if anybody's had any success with it. You know, you're supposed to put the isopropyl alcohol on it. I'm not going to really use it for the heads. I have a tracking problem, so there's these audio control, control heads. I guess you would put it, they call it AC, when you read about it, and I believe that's probably got to be cleaned. They say you could probably do it with Q-tips or something, but they recommend these chamois covered cleaning sticks. I wonder if you've heard about them, where you could buy them, or one article they said you could even take a chamois cloth from a car and you know, just cut a little piece and use that. Any information about that, Dick? Back to you. WS2N.
Very fine, Paul. I think almost every one of us, at one time or another, have cleaned up video cassette heads, audio heads on tape recorders and whatever. These recording heads, we have all cleaned them with alcohol and Q-tips. The really professional people who have written articles do not recommend a Q-tip for fear. They don't make it clear why. To tell somebody you shouldn't do something without telling them why really creates a bit of a problem.
I'll tell you why if you want to know.
There's a man who's been cleaning heads, so go right ahead. You got it, Eric.
All right. Q-tips are okay for audio heads. They're not good for video heads because they're small, and they actually look like a little teeny piece of rectangle. And the cotton on the tip of the Q-tip will actually get snagged on that little piece of fur. I snap it off. And that's a good reason not to use Q-tips.
Okay. How come the fibers of a piece of chamois, a tiny piece of chamois on the end of a chamois stick intended for cleaning, how come it wouldn't also snag and create grief to that little ferrite bead or whatever it is out there? Back to you, Eric.
You're talking about a surface that's actually short and doesn't have any loops, whereas if the cotton itself is actually strands of cotton. And this kind of will hook onto stuff, and that's what you're trying to avoid. The chamois is very short, and if you look at it under the microscope, it's just short ends with no looping, you know. It has nothing to grab.
Okay, that seems to make a lot of sense. So, if you're cleaning a video head, better use something that's not going to create a snagging action like the individual strands of cotton swab. And a chamois apparently carefully used with the right cleaning fluid does the job well. But if I understand you correctly, you, just like I, have often used cotton swabs and alcohol on audio heads, and I think you're saying because they're so smooth and there's nothing to snag onto them if it's not defective, a good audio head is so smooth to the surface that there's no real problem. Leaving a whole lot of cotton swab strands behind might interfere with the audio performance a little bit if they got stuck in the head mechanism by some crazy means, but...
Most heads today, I mean, you'll see that there's heads that have what they call a glass face, where you can't actually get anything in the gap, and that's the trick. Most audio heads, since they don't make them much anymore, because who uses audio tape? The actual laminate that makes the gap of the pickup head, it usually has some composite in it, so there's actually no hole to get something stuck in.
That's good. So I think that's some of the information you're looking for, Paul, as I see it. And it is a VCR head that I think you wanted to clean, so you got to be careful. Eric, do you know of a place that still exists where Paul can go to buy one of those little chamois sticks that are intended for cleaning up video cassette heads? How about you, Eric?
I can help from K2KEY.
Okay, we're going to go to Eric and Mel in that order. Eric first, go ahead.
There's a company called Margatech. Just go online, and they sell them cleaning supplies and magnetic head cleaner. So, Margatech is a good company. There are places you can pick it up, but, you know, usually if you go to an audio video house like Adwire Video, they'll have them.
Now, you talked about Margatech. Can you spell that?
M-A-R-K-E-R-T-E-K, I think it is.
Okay, Margatech, M-A-R-K-E-R-T-E-C. Sounds like a goodie. Let's see where Mel goes to get his supplies. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, well, I've seen many video heads both on, consumer-type videotape machines and the big commercial ones, pneumatic machines and all. And what I've always done, and it's worked quite well, is I take a book of matches, the inside of a book of matches, that cardboard, I just put a little alcohol, denatured alcohol on it, hold it up against the video head, and turn it slowly. Just turn that video head slowly so it brushes up against it, and gently holding it with that piece of cardboard and the denatured alcohol, and works wonders to clean many a video head without any problems, any damage, or any problem of clogging the gap in there. Never seem to occur with that method, Dick, over.
In 2MB.
Okay. And very crafty there, Mel. Book of matches. Although, because Paul, everyone in his house is very environmentally sensitive, and they don't have any cigarette smokers, and therefore books of matches may be a little bit of a problem, but he'll find it. Barry, how do you solve the problem? N2MB, K2LIW.
Okay, I just wanted to mention, when you clean the video head, hold the chamois or whatever you're using against the head and then turn the head back and forth. The reason you want to do that is because you don't want to push along, an axis of the head. You'll snap that stuff off. You want to do it in the direction that the head turns is how you want to clean it.
Good suggestion. How many video cassette heads have you cleaned by the methods you describe? And in fact, what do you use for the actual cleaning object as well as the cleaning fluid? Back to you, Barry.
Okay, I used to use a good handkerchief. I always carried a handkerchief with me, cloth. And I'd put alcohol on it. And I would press on the head very lightly and turn the head back and forth with my method. And believe me, I've cleaned a lot of them.
Yeah, I think Eric would worry a little bit about the individual threads of a handkerchief could possibly get caught, whereas the you don't really have threads in a chamois.
That's actually the correct method in which to do it, Dick.
That's actually the correct method. Are you speaking of a handkerchief? Back to you, Eric.
Actually, a handkerchief is not a problem because of the weave, and it's very fine. But there's stuff called Kim wipes, which is essentially a lint-free tissue, and you can saturate it with alcohol, isopropyl. Preferably the stuff intended for cleaning as opposed to the stuff you get from the drugstore because it has more water in it. And you can basically, as he suggested, hold it up against the drum and move the actual head back and forth across it without applying too much pressure. Now I'm a glutton for punishment. Now I'll use my finger if I don't have anything handy, but you know, I've never whacked a head, but I wouldn't recommend it.
And the chem wipes you're speaking of, where would a person buy that, and roughly the cost for chem wipes?
You can get them at scientific supplies, medical supply places. You can also get them at Market Tech and just like Adware Video.
What are chem wipes originally intended to do, Eric?
They're two cores for optical surfaces, but they're intended for lint-free cleaning of various different kinds of electronic components, magnetic heads, things of that nature. It almost feels a little bit rough to the touch, but it's good stuff.
Okay, Don, good suggestion for you.
Reflector 9126, link clear.
Okay, we've got some great suggestion here tonight. Maybe get some further questions on what you've heard so far, Paul. WS2N, our space expert, K2LIW, with Mel, K2KEY.
Very good. Thanks for the information. Yeah, you know, these things are so inexpensive nowadays, you would think, well, okay, I'll go out and buy another one. But what it is this unit has also a DVD recorder in it. So, you know, it's two in one. I could dub back and forth. I do plenty of times I'll record a lot of space shots or interviews with NASA or whatever, and then, you know, you get them all, let's say, on a disc, and then I'll transfer them over to a tape, and then I'm able to, you know, cut out everything from commercials to, you know, unimportant pieces. You know, I could put it, you know, I could do a lot of editing.
Welcome to the New England Reflector, 912, Channel 6.
Keep the machine operating. And the new machines, they still have them. This one comes with a tuner, so I could hook it up to a cable without a box if I want to, without a cable box. The new ones, most of them now come without tuners. You need a cable box in front of it. Of course, you could always pay more money and still get the few that are left that do have the tuners in them. So that's my motivation to keep this one particular machine running. So I thought I'd do that. It's got a tracking problem. You could record tapes in other machines and put it in, everything's fine, but when you record on this thing, apparently the recording capability of, you know, putting the track down, it's not working properly. They show the top of the tape has the tracking and the audio, and then the middle part has the video. So it's, I'll have to concentrate, I guess, near the edges on this recording head. For the tracking. Let me drop one second. Some of these are. Tapes that you put in, you know, it's not for recording shows like Disney. You know, they're all they've got copywriting on them and all. You can't do that. But I did read an article about it. This copywriting problem that they have. Your TV sees these movies that are copyrighted, no problem. So the VCRs are picking up everything, and what they do, I know this came up a week or two ago, and somebody was talking about. I think he was talking about it, Dick. In between the blanking, when you scan the whole screen, and then you go back up to the beginning of the screen, the TV, you know, basically shuts itself off for that split second, in a sense, and doesn't see anything in between. They have some kind of noise that's being produced for the copyrighted tape. And what happens is the tape wants to see everything, that noise is coming across during that split millisecond, and it confuses the tracking of the movie, and that's why it all gets fouled up. And that's the reason you can sometimes hear the audio, but you can't see the picture. But I thought I'd bring that up. Because the other part of the machine, the DVD part, thing happened with that. I record on a 6-hour speed all the time when we drop it. The 6-hour speed is, you know, I never really seen much of a difference between that and the faster mode that you could use. But now I decided to use the 3-hour speed because the 6-hour speed sometimes wasn't recognizing these discs. In the article that I read, when the tapes go forth in the slow 6-hour speed instead of the fast 2-hour speed, there's sometimes problems. The picture isn't as good because the information is closer together on the slow-moving tape. That's why you don't have as good a picture. So that made me think, well, maybe it's true with these discs. With the DVD disc, so let me run it at twice the speed, 3-hour speed instead of the 6-hour speed. So maybe that holds true too, where it's further apart. You know, the information is actually further apart because the disc is going faster, and that seems to work. I mean, and now it recognizes all the discs that I put in there. It records everything. So the last week, anyway. Time will tell. You know, it goes by a couple of weeks without having a problem. Then I know I'm good to go. And that's the story on this machine. It's a Magnavox, by the way, in case anybody's wondering. Back to you, Dick. WSY.
Let me correct some of that, Dick.
Yeah, I was about to send it over to you. Go ahead, Eric.
All right. First of all, you're somewhat right about the videotape. Whereas that what happens is they run the tape linearly at a slower speed, and the head's spinning, so that actually puts the tracks closer together. Also, you get a reduction of writing speed, which actually leads to a reduction of bandwidth that the machine is capable of handling. That's why the pictures in the 6-hour speed look much lousier than they do in the 3-hour speed. Now, with the DVD, it's a whole different story. Let me let it drop. The different speeds of the DVD actually, when you're using a DVD recorder, it's something called CBR, it's constant bit rate. And basically, what you're doing is you're trying to make that same real estate on the disk hold more data, and you do it by increasing the rate of compression, not by actually changing the distance between the tracks. When you're doing something that's variable bit rate, VBR, which they actually don't do in the disc recorder, allows you to pack more density per same bit rate in terms of picture information. But you'll notice that your DVD and your CD player actually changes speed as it goes from inside to outside to make a constant loading. About the radius and how that moves to get a bit rate to come out at, say, 1 megabit. And you go to the very edge of the disk, you'll find out that the bit be spaced farther apart because it's coming out at a flying higher speed, so they actually slow the motor down. But those are the differences. K2, Jack.
K2, K2, you want to comment?
No, working, guys. One of the things that I've come to believe...
Let it cycle, Dick.
One of the things that I've come to believe, Eric, is that in the case of video cassette recorders that have two or three separate speeds, Some of the machines will brag about the fact that they will cover all three speeds. To a consumer, that sounds good. To a slightly smarter person, that may not sound so good, because in order for the diagonal stripe of the video that's laid down not to overlap with each other, on the machines that are, have the ability to run very slow speeds, I think they've got a set of heads where the height of the head and the magnetic width that it's laying down is quite narrow to accommodate the slow speed. Therefore, when you're in the fast speed, you're not using the full head width, therefore you're not getting the highest possible signal-to-noise ratio. You're not using as much magnetic material. You're laying down empty spaces in between the stripes when you're in the fast speed. First of all, am I anywhere near correct on my assumptions along these lines, Eric? Go ahead, Eric.
No, you would be, but you're not. Because if you look at video heads, the machines that play SLP in the super slow speeds, there's actually two different sets of heads. One, I think, is 10 microns, and the other one, I think, is 25 microns.
Okay, so there really are four heads spinning, and depending on whether they use the odd ones or the even ones, they're appropriate for the fast or slow tape transport speed. Is that approximately right, Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, the heads have more than four tips on them. If it's a fancy machine, it'll have another set of tips on it called a flying erase. It'll actually erase the track, so when you do a pickup edit, you get a clean edit. But yeah, you'll find the multi-speed machines actually have two different sets of hole tips, one thicker than the other.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm hearing the sound of a tracking error that I think Paul is running into. He believes that the control track or the timing track is not being laid down correctly, possibly because a head that needs cleaning. But I think many machines will have either a manual or an automatic or a settable control somewhere that adjusts tracking. When that's misset, the video does get really mixed up. Is it possible that he has a good control head and a good track control track, but because the tracking control itself is misset, that's the reason why he's not getting coherent video. Back to you, Eric, on that one.
Well, let's ask this question first. Does it happen on his own recordings, or when he tries to play something from somewhere else?
You got it, Paul.
Okay, Eric, yeah, if you record on another VCR, plug it in, no problem. Works very good. It's only when you record on its own machine. You record on that video cassette and then play it back, not only in this machine, but the other machine, any other machine you play. You can take that same tape, play it in another machine. The same thing happens. It can't. The other machine can't even follow it. What happens, it'll play for a minute, and then you can see you lose it, and you completely lose it, and then it comes back again. Both machines do have automatic tracking, by the way, Eric, so eventually it tends to come back, and then it'll stay good for about another minute, and you know, the same thing will happen over and over again. Back to you, Eric.
It sounds like a bad pitch roller. The tape is actually riding up and down on the guides. And another thing that could actually happen is that the guides actually have a certain kind of alignment. And if they're not exactly in the right spot, it'll make the machine rather crazy about trying to figure out where the tracks are.
Let's find out the history of this machine, Paul. Is this a machine that you have owned that worked correctly until very recently and it just suddenly went bad? Or has it slowly been getting worse? Or is it a machine that the price was right, somebody gave it to you, and now you'd like it to work right? Give us a little bit of history of the machine itself. WS2N, K2RIW in the group.
Yeah, it's worked perfectly for, I guess, a little over 3 years since I've had it. And recently, I'd say within the last couple of months, it started acting up, and then it got to the point of where I couldn't take it anymore. I started putting in the cleaners, the dry cleaner I use, by the way, not the wet one. and some guys on the internet don't recommend that. It's too rough and this and that, but I tell you what, that really helped out good. By the way, I put that in my other old machine too, and that it really improved the quality of the picture itself. Unfortunately, it does not repair the tracking problem. And the pinch roll, yeah, I read that that could be a possibility, but I have no idea how I would go about changing that. I guess I'd have to order a part or whatever, or maybe have to bring it to somebody. That sounds. I mean, they did talk about early JVC machines, which somehow Magnavox is involved with JVC, and they said the pinch rollers, they had some kind of a brass connection on the bottom that would come loose, and the pinch roller would hold it, starts to fall in through the bottom, and you could put it back on and solder it back together, you know, some complicated thing. I'd probably do more damage in doing something like that than correcting it, but, you know, I'll look at that, Erica. Maybe that's a possibility. I don't think I'll be able to see it. That's the problem, to actually see something like that. So I'm just hoping to clean it and straighten it out that way. Back to you, Dick.
Oh, let me ask you a question. Alright, let me ask you this. Alright, think about the picture that you see. Now, you could actually see a picture that's almost like a picture that's in snow. It can be almost locked up, but it looks like it's half snowy. That would indicate one very either badly clogged head or a broken head. And if it's a fancy machine, it could actually have a record head that could be clogged or broken. If you want to see if it's a pinch roller, you take the cover off the deck, put a tape in, set it up, and hit play, and watch the edge of the tape as it goes by the pinch roller. It's a little bit past it where the caption is. See, if it wiggles up and down, you know that pinch roller is bowed, and cleaning it all you want isn't going to fix it. Actually, you can fix it by taking it out and putting it in a drill and using an emery plaid and make it flat again, you know, a nail file. But, you know, they make those machines out of plastic. They're not really intended to be fixed, like the story you were telling before, the brass bushing, the space that keeps the pinch roller in the right place and keeps the right pressure on. Pressure has to be even. Otherwise, if there's more pressure on the bottom of the pinch roller, the tape's going to ride up. If there's more pressure on the top of the pinch roller, the tape's going to ride down. Now, on all professional machines, there are actually very careful adjustments to make that extremely flat and extremely accurate. These are all IWK to reject.
Yeah, I think Eric's going to have to look at this with a pretty big magnifying glass or a microscope to catch all these subtle details of alignment. Where it worked for him, assuming he's the original owner and it worked for him for 3 years and then very recently started shifting. Yeah, I guess wear could fit into that characteristic.
It's a mechanical device. It's made out of cheap plastic.
Okay. Mel, what have you done in circumstances like this and what do you recommend? K2KEY, go right ahead.
KB2, JXM.
JXM recognized, but Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, having serviced plenty of them because we had a lot of machines out in the field. My company, at that time, for surveillance, we had a lot of time-lapse machines, so I had every kind of problem that you can think of. Used a lot of mostly Sony equipment, but I also used JVC time-lapse systems. Now, Paul did say something. He said if you take a tape from another machine and you play it on here, it works right. Am I correct, Paul? In other words, a pre-recorded tape from another machine, does it work right? Does it track correctly? Everything work correctly if it's a pre-recorded tape from another machine? Paul, over.
USL, Mel. I've made, I guess, 10 different recordings. Thinking maybe it would, you know, maybe it's just one of those things, but now everyone works perfectly. I've even taken a commercial tape that I own, a couple of commercial tapes that I own, put them in, they work perfectly. I took an old Disney tape that I have, perfect now. So yes, that's true. Back to you.
Okay, I thought you heard that. I heard that. So that eliminates all your mechanical problems, such as pinch roller, the head, and all that stuff. If another tape works, but when you make a recording on this machine, that's when you see the problem. Whether you play it back on this machine or you play it back on another machine, it's only when you make the original picture on this machine that the problem shows up. Am I correct? Over.
Yes, absolutely correct. No, very good.
Okay, so now what your problem is, an electronic problem. It's not laying down the tracking correctly, electronically. It is not doing that. It's not a mechanical problem with your machine. It's a electronic problem that the system, when it's in record, is not recording the correct tracking information onto the tape. Not because of mechanics, but because of electronics. Go ahead, Dick.
M2EO.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Rich and Eric in that order for comments on this. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I have a similar problem that I think that I haven't solved, but I think Paul may be running into this. There are actually, I'm not totally clear on it, but my people have expanded. One, I'm trying to put it in now. Also, I'm being laid down somewhere different. I have some tapes here that run fine. Other tapes, these are commercial tapes, they're not bootleg tapes, they're legitimate tapes. I have a few movies I haven't been able to watch because the audio comes through, but the video drops out after about 10 seconds or so. It'll run the original credits on the videotape. Because they usually, there's an old standard that the credits are on, and then the tape, it actually switches to a newer standard. And there's a sequence, at least on this machine, and I don't know what it is. You have to press certain buttons to get it into that sequence, standard. And what happens, it looks like a tracking problem. It's not a tracking problem. The video will come up and drop out, come up and drop out. And I think what may be happening in Paul's case, the machine is recording in this new standard, trying to play back in this new standard, can't do it, and when he records on the other machine, he's recording in the other standard, and the first machine is playing it back in that standard because it can handle it. I'd like to know what the problem is, because there's some type of release on my machine, which is a Sony combination DVD VCR player. They're not very clear on what you got to push to get it into that other standard. I have a few tapes I bought that I can't watch. Back to that.
Yeah, we're going to go to Eric first and then Gary second for comments and all this. Gary, your last transmission was extremely noisy. You're going to want to change something between now and the time we get to you. Eric, what do you suggest for now that we get a little bit more of the information, both for Paul and for Rich? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. The Wi-Fi asterisk, you know, doesn't work in another machine. If it's a more modern machine which has a separate record head from the playback head, that would make sense where one of the heads are bad, or maybe one of the driver amps are bad, that actually make the FM that gets put on the tape. That's why I asked if we saw like a stable picture with a lot of snow in it, which would indicate one head being bad, but still being locked up. So that means that it's producing a control track, which is on the opposite edge of the tape from the audio. And without that, it has a rather difficult time figuring out what to lock up to and what it'll do. It'll lock and unlock and lock and unlock. Now, what Mel said is almost completely true, but not completely true. You can actually have a partial plug in a head and have it play back just fine, but not record properly.
And let's see, what else? There's any number of other things that could make it a record-only problem. So he's really saying it's a record-only problem. That could be, very much could be.